from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
It's time for a hit and run on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score and on the Marquee Sports Network. Here's Matt Spiegel.
Good morning and welcome into Hit and Run. If you're just joining us, perhaps on the Marquee Sports Network, I've been rolling on 670 The Score for a couple hours. Been an eventful show and a fun show because we have relevant August baseball. Relevant late August baseball. This is the dream every year for me when I start this baseball show in this unique two-team town, is that somebody steps forward and is a buyer at the deadline. Somebody steps forward and is offering playoff possibilities in late August and September, and indeed the Chicago Cubs are. Right now, they're 4 games back of the Milwaukee Brewers, who are not allowed to lose games anymore. They've won 7 in a row, have Milwaukee. The Cubs, though, also are second in the National League wildcard race, and there are 3 teams that make the wild card. So the Phillies are number 1, then the Cubs, they're half game up on the resurgent Arizona Diamondbacks, who are a half game up themselves for the final spot on the Cincinnati Reds, and the Miami Marlins lurk there. So every game matters, every roster decision matters, every at-bat matters, every pitching decision matters, every mound visit matters, and last night we had the greatest mound visit in the history of mound visits. One of them, anyway, because the young prospect, Jordan Wicks, number 10 prospect in the Cubs system, makes his start last night, gives up a homer to Ke'Bryan Hayes to start the game. A rocket single up the middle from Brian Reynolds, I think it was, as the second hitter. Walks the third hitter, and then is behind 2-0 on Connor Joe, with 2 men on and nobody out. And Tommy Hotovy goes out to the mound. Later we find out that he and David Ross wanted to get across the message, hey, you're really good at your off-speed stuff. Go ahead and lean on that, okay? Stop trying to establish the fastball and think like a big league pitcher, yada, yada. Just throw your junk. It's really, really good. And 27 changeups over the next 5 innings that got 9 swings and misses were the highlight of the arsenal from Jordan Wicks as he retired 15 in a row and picked up his first major league win in his first major league start. Amazing stuff. Let's talk about that and other things with our friend Lance Brzdowski from the Marquee Sports Network. You see him on there doing a lot of different stuff. He is the player development analyst. He's also a guy you'll see on pre and post doing a million things, mid-game. And you'll see him with me and Danny Parkins on Tuesday nights when we do our gambling cast, which is affectionately called Hey Better Better. Lance, welcome in as you join me right now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. What do you say, Lance? How are you?
I'm fantastic, Matt. Thanks for having me, man. I enjoy those gambling casts. They're a ton of fun to talk with you guys and kind of sit in on the usual conversation you and Danny always have. I feel like an outsider, but maybe kind of an insider. I don't know.
Yeah, no. You're definitely third wheeling on the chemistry, but you're mixing your way in there, dude. You're tussling, and you helped me survive Danny, because at that point in the day, I've had him enough in my life. You know what I mean?
I get it.
All right. So listen, I just talked about Jordan Wicks. That was really fascinating. And from a player development perspective, which you know so well, talk about the process over the last couple of years, because that is a first round pick from 2 years ago. And one of the reasons they took him is they thought that they could possibly fast track him to the major leagues. And here we are.
Totally, yeah. So they added multiple pitches to his repertoire. You might have noticed yesterday he was throwing like six. It's a very deep mix. It's not, you know, velo stuff. I have two pitches, throw them as much as I possibly can. Slider 50% of the time or something like that. This is a different kind of pitcher. It's a pitchability mix. It's multiple fastballs. It's the sweeper curve off that. He added a cutter. The sweeper and the cutter are the two pitches they added. The sinker as well was a pitch that he kind of toggled off at the beginning of last year, then brought into his repertoire. He leaned on that a bit more this year, and especially yesterday, than he had even at Kansas State in the past. But the cutter and the slider are the two big pitches to kind of help him. Cutter into righties and slider more as a lefty pitch. But that start was fascinating from a lot of perspectives. I think the one that jumps out to me the most is when you look at what he was doing at AAA in terms of usage. He was using his fastball about 35% of the time, changeup 25%. And yesterday's outing, he basically flipped those usage, right? You were talking about that mound visit that Hovey had where they were like, hey, they're going to start, the Pirates are going to start swinging. You might as well throw your changeup kind of as much as possible. And you saw that. He threw 27 of them. The craziest thing to me, though, and this is something I definitely am watching going forward with him, he only threw three of those changeups inside the strike zone. So he is heavily outside of the zone with that pitch yesterday. The Pirates are a team in particular that isn't particularly strong versus left-handed pitching. They chase a lot. They're not good versus changeups. So going forward, I think it's very interesting. I'm always the guy that's looking forward. I definitely want to reflect and give, you know, Wicks a ton of credit for that outing. I've talked with him a ton. He's a super sharp guy. I loved when he went out for that pitching change. You saw his body language was super stoic and sharp. That's the impression I've gotten every single time I've communicated with him. He's a very, very mature pitcher, I think, mentally, in terms of his approach to the game, probably because of his many years at college and the innings he's thrown. But watching going forward for me is what happens if he's in a situation against a team where they're not swinging at the changeup outside of the zone. Is he able to come in the zone with it? Is it as effective? Does he go to other pitches? But regardless, the changeup was fantastic yesterday. For me, it's just a matter of how it looks going forward when maybe it's not totally on. Can he go to the other five pitches in his repertoire and can those get major league hitters out? I think they can. It's just a matter of, like, does he dominate like he did yesterday, or is it more kind of league average starter, number four, number five? Regardless, both of those are good options for the Cubs right now.
Yeah, I mean, both of those are real good options, especially to be able to plug in right now when you've got injuries in the middle of a pennant race. Interesting analysis there from you. Lots of good stuff in there. I love the stuff about the personal mentality, fact that you've met him and you see it and you saw it. You talk about the body language during the greatest mound visit in history. And that message of, like, go ahead and throw the, they're going to swing. Here's what I would counter with. I'd counter with two things. One, it's a strike to ball changeup, right? It starts looking like a strike and ends up a ball, kind of like Fulmer's slider when he's healthy. And we can talk about him as a strike to ball slider. So that's how you take advantage of aggressive hitters, right? Is if they're going to be swinging, go ahead and throw that one. He seems to have the arm speed that makes it look like a fastball upon delivery, and that can mess with batters' minds. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Totally. So I think you're spot on. Changeups are generally chase pitches. They're out of the zone actually more than the average slider in Major League Baseball. So that's definitely something to consider. My counter to your counter would be, what happens when a team's approach is just, I'm not swinging at anything down in the zone? Like, if you want to try to spot a changeup down away, or you want to spot fastballs or cutters down, I'm fine with that. I'm only swinging belt or up. And maybe that's obviously an idealistic approach. Like, I don't necessarily know whether a team top down in a lineup would be able to execute that. Maybe a team like the Braves can. I bet the Dodgers might be able to. Some of the sharper teams in baseball,
yeah,
with really deep lineups. But that's kind of what I'm watching going forward. I think he's going to get the Reds in his next outing. They're more average versus left-handed pitching. They're aggressive as a team offensively too. So I don't know if we're going to see a drastic difference, but I do think it's a step up in terms of offense that he's going to see. The Pirates offense is not good versus lefties. Reds is more average, so we'll see kind of how he does going forward there. But I agree with you, strike the ball pitch. Yeah, arm speed is something, you know, I talked to Ryan here on, and we have stuff on the data side that could kind of prove out why changeups are good. We generally look at things like the drop separation between a fastball and a changeup, the velocity separation between those two pitches. But if you talk to players and coaches, I think the thing they always bring up is just, how's the sell of the pitch, the arm speed of the pitch? How does it look out of hand? The tough thing with that on the public side is it's hard for us to kind of prove it out because we don't have a lot of public biomechanic information. So we're not able to say, yes, his arm speed, you know, the differential arm speed between his four seam and his changeup is better than league average. I think internally teams can probably do that, but we just probably will never get that biomechanic data publicly. So that's a beautiful blend of like, the data can tell us one thing, but you also have to talk to players and coaches. And the thing that I've generally learned, I used to be very stubborn with a lot of data a couple of years ago and stuff, thinking that that was the only thing to look at. But then as you grow in the game and you talk to people who are incredibly smart, generally when they bring up something over and over and you hear from multiple perspectives, I think that stuff is generally true, even if we don't have objective information to back it up. So I totally agree with the arm speed sell thing. Yeah. I think that matters for some guys in particular. But Wicks also has underlying data in the changeup that looks good too. So again, I think it's a mesh of all that. And as you said, it is strike the ball.
So yeah, a couple things there. First of all, what he's talking about, how the teams always have better stuff than the public has in terms of measurables. Yeah. This is why guys like Lance and others like dream of working for teams eventually, because then you could have access to all of that stuff, right? Then you could really know everything and really be as smart as you can be informed. All right, I'm going to play something a little bit later on in the show from last night's game about Wick. So we'll get to that a little bit later on. But while I have Lance Brozdowski, help me figure out what other pitching can come up from the minors in what sort of roles. Here's my impressions as of right now, that Keegan Thompson is here not really to be given another chance in specific high leverage necessarily. You saw Rossi even in late high leverage, I don't know how to say it, go to Palencia last night to try and finish the game instead of maybe Keegan, and then go to Adbert when he had to. Like, Keegan is here to be a long man. He's proven that he's good at that, proven that he can do the multiple inning relief stint. So that's one thing, one data point for me. The other is Michael Fulmer now to the injured list with a forearm strain, which is terrifying, and I don't know if he's coming back at all. So who are the other options for high leverage, maybe right-handers, or it could be a lefty, to come up from the minors and help this team right now in win-now mode of a pennant race?
Yeah, this is a tough one, specifically because of the qualifier of right now, because I think if Ben Brown was healthy, he'd be a really nice addition to this team. He's currently down with an oblique injury. I believe he's in Arizona rehabbing. You know, I was actually talking to Alex Cohn, the AAA broadcaster, this morning for an interview we did with him in our pregame show. And he said that Ben Brown told him that he'll be back. Like, he will be back soon. He didn't think this was a big thing. So if that timetable speeds up and is good and there's nothing drastically wrong with the oblique and he gets back, I do think he's a guy that they can slot into more leverage situations, because I like the fastball and I like the curveball. The curveball is kind of a wacky pitch. It's pretty hard. It works really well either handedness. And he's already kind of 94, 96. I think if he's pure pen where it's just one inning or two, he could jump that up to maybe 96, 98 or something like that. Hmm. And I think that would help everything grade out better. You know, velocity has a huge influence on the grade of a pitch. So I really like Ben Brown. I think in terms of confidence in a leverage situation, he could work. He also has kind of that mindset that I really like, kind of the Jordan Wicks stoic angle that I think would work in a situation later in the game. But the thing we've seen this year specifically, and this is probably a combination of Ross, and I also think the front office, is just not putting those young guys in crazy leverage situations right off the bat. Palencia almost kind of backed into it based on that extra inning game in Milwaukee where he came in late and they were like, we kind of got no one else, man. You got it. And, you know, he's pitched kind of up and down since for the most part. I do think that his stuff is really good, and I still think maybe there's more to piece together beyond the stuff. Throws really hard. The fastball does kind of get hit despite the velocity. The slider, I love. I want him throwing that as much as possible, I would say. I don't know if there's a specific answer of like, yes, we have this prospect that we can immediately slot into leverage, which then brings it back to, again, blending the analytics in what I think on field matters from a Ross perspective of like, how does this guy look in this situation from a mentality standpoint? You know, the data is probably going to say that we like Palencia in those spots because we think the slider is one of the best quality pitches in that bullpen. But if Palencia can't consistently get those, convert positively on those higher leverage opportunities, then I don't think personally that Ross would be confident putting him in those situations. You know, that's again the blend of like, you know, Caleb Killian, we saw this with, right? Like, he's a good example of like, we think the four seam is a better pitch than you think it is internally as an organization. Like, it just grades out better. And he's like, well, I'm just more comfortable with the sinker, so I'm going to throw it more. So you get that blend of like, okay, we think that if you toggled four seam usage up, it would benefit you more. But, you know, would that come at the expense of command? And would the result of that not be positive? Like, that's always the ebb and flow of a lot of these situations. We've seen that a bit with Wesneski too. The cutter is a really good pitch. I don't necessarily know if he has total confidence in that cutter, especially executing inside the lefties. So it's like, okay, if the guy can't execute what we believe the data says will make him a better pitcher, then do you force that guy into that bucket or do you push them to what they're more comfortable with? This is something I imagine Hadovy thinks about all the time. It's a consideration probably for every pitcher. Ideally, you run into a situation like Jordan Wicks where it's like, oh, your changeup is probably your best pitch. Oh, and actually you throw it a lot. Oh, and you're comfortable with it? Great. That's perfect. That's what we like to see. Yeah. So there we go. That's the trifecta of things. But I wish I had a better answer for you. Fulmer being down hurts. I think the key here is to try to get Brent Brown to the major league level as a reliever. Don't worry about kind of stretching him back out to 4 or 5 innings. See if the velo jumps up in short stints and use him as like a fastball curveball guy that won't have big issues versus eat headiness because of how that curveball works. So that's kind of what I'm waiting for, but that's very heavily dependent on timetable, as I just said. I don't know where the oblique is. He's in Arizona. Hopefully he's up back at AAA maybe in another week or two, and then you could probably fast track him into the pen at that point. But I don't see a clear answer here. You know, they have Shane Green in AAA. They started in a couple situations. He's an old Braves Dodger reliever. You know, he's only 90-93-ish, kind of in that window, sinker cutter guy. I don't really see him in leverage spots. There's some lefties down there, Riley Martin and Bailey Horn. Both of them, I think, are better, obviously, getting lefties out than righties. Again, like, I just don't think there's an obvious, this guy can now go pitch the seventh. You know, I really think they got to heavily rely on Alzolay, Leiter, and Merriweather and kind of figure out the rest from there.
Yeah, and they'll need a fourth one that they can trust. So maybe it'll be Keegan Thompson given another shot, or maybe I like the idea of Ben Brown. Talking to Lance Brozdowski from Marquee here on Hit and Run, which is also on Marquee right now this half hour. So the roster is at 26. In September, so by next week, you can go to 28, and that probably means one position player and one pitcher. Ideally, it's Ben Brown healthy to come in and be the extra possible high-leverage reliever. Love that idea. And then is there any way it's not Pete Crow Armstrong, who has been fast-tracked and is at AAA and has been killing pitching, and, oh, by the way, used in a corner outfield spot this week? Well, that's interesting. He's never played corner outfield at any level other than right now as he prepares for a potential September call-up. He's coming, isn't he, Lance?
I really think he is. I don't really have any inside info here as to whether he will be coming, but I do think it makes a lot of logical sense. I also think, to your point there about playing corner outfield spots, oftentimes I think the organization, or any organization, not even just the Cubs, will tell you inadvertently what they're thinking on a particular guy.
Yep.
You know, like, I to some extent, I think this happened with Mervish here, where they bring in multiple options in the offseason. You know, neither of those obviously panned out, but that was almost, to me, the organization saying, you know, we think Mervish maybe needs more polishing, despite hitting 37 home runs in the minor leagues the prior year. You know, so, like, that's the situation we're seeing with PCA now, where it's like, okay, the team may not say he is coming up, but by them playing him in the corner spots, you could kind of interpret, oh, okay, you know, why else would they be doing that? They're not just doing that in late August to, like, get PCA acclimated to the corner spots for next year. They're doing it because I think from a game planning standpoint and probably a late positioning standpoint, you know, they may not want him in center field all the time, or they may think the best lineup is to put a guy like Talkman at the top of the order with high OBP and have him play a serviceable center field. And then maybe they like a guy like him over Suzuki in right field or something along those lines, especially with a deep corner out there in right. I think PCA would play a great right field. Obviously, he plays an incredible center field. So to me, it makes a lot of sense. The thing that I think is the hidden part with PCA, and I'll qualify this by saying that I think we're seeing a widening of a gap between AAA pitching and major league pitching, such that guys who are coming up to the major league level, you know, maybe struggle a bit off the bat more than you normally would project in the past. And that's a product of just teams having a very good understanding of when stuff is good in a minor league arm, there's probably no point in leaving them in the minor leagues. We've seen teams like the Mariners promote guys from AA on a whim. We've seen this with a variety of other organizations as well. And as a byproduct of that, you run into situations where major league or minor league hitters will look really good and then come up and struggle right off the bat. Cause it's like, whoa, I'm getting great stuff every day as opposed to the minor leagues where I'm getting a lot of quad A guy mixed with good arms. Given that, though, PCA has dominated, particularly from a slug perspective. He's over 500 in his last 14 games down at AAA. That's kind of almost the unexpected part of his profile. When he was with the Mets, he was an OBP guy. I always thought of him as like, okay, what if you get Kevin Kiermaier, who's a perennial Gold Glove defender, one of the best center fielders in baseball, and you add some OBP, you add some more OBP, a little more slug. Now we're seeing that he could be well more than that. He could be an impact power bat. I think that's one of the most underrated games. We're thinking of him as like a defensive replacement coming up.
Yeah.
But I genuinely think this guy can have an average barrel rate at the major league level. And, you know, I was trying to figure out some like offensive comps. Maybe like a Brian Reynolds or a James Outman from the Dodgers and the Pirates for Brian Reynolds, where it's a nice blend of barrel with OBP and high average. I just, those two guys in particular have more pop than I think you give them credit, not you specifically, but we as an industry give them credit for, especially Outman early in the year.
Yeah.
And Reynolds is another guy too who could put up 25 tanks. And I think PCA is pushed into that window where it's not just he's coming up for the outfield defense. He's coming up because this guy has an above average barrel rate in AAA. And I think he's going to slug probably close to 450, 500, even if that comes with the low average. If he's able to walk at 10% clip and put up like a 450 slug, like that's an above average hitter. Like I think we're almost undervaluing
wow.
the offensive side relative to the defense, because the defense is super obvious. But to me, what we're saying from a batted ball perspective is fantastic with PCA.
Wow. Well, that would be incredible gravy. But if he's defense and speed and a little bit of you know, a little bit of OBP here in a pennant race, that would be great. By the way, Michael Harris of the Braves, 199 career games in the minors. Pete Crow Armstrong, as of right now, 201. So there are comps out there. Lance, you're the best. Thank you so much, man. Have a great day, and we'll see you on the pregame today.
I appreciate it. Thanks a ton, Matt.
You got it. That's Lance Brozdowski from Marquee. Yeah, I love that comp of Michael Harris II, the excellent Braves center fielder and nine hitter. Often. Sometimes he's a right fielder as well. All right, I mentioned this. This from the broadcast last night, and it was the Fox broadcast. Tom Verducci, one of the great baseball writers of all time, who's become, I think, the best writer turned media person. He's calling games. He's a color analyst. But listen to him talk about Jordan Wicks's changeup and the comp he makes to a true legend of a left-handed pitcher is striking.
And Kevin, I think that changeup is so good. I don't think, you know, that with exposure, in other words, the more hitters see it, the more they'll be onto it. You know, it's a Johan Santana type changeup where you can sit on it, know it's coming, and it's just still hard to pick up. And it was, I think, even more impressive. The two strikeouts he got on called sinkers in the zone, when you could tell Pirates hitters at that point were sitting on his changeup. And got fastball for strike three. Just shows you his ability to command the strike zone with all of his pitches, but also his IQ.
See, you don't want to get your head out over your skis, but when you hear stuff like that, whew, kind of gets going a little bit. Because what Verducci's saying is that Johan Santana, the brilliant Minnesota Twin for years and years, and then effective as a Met, then what, they have 140-some pitch no-hitter that kind of led to some arm issues that never went away. But Santana, you couldn't not swing at his changeup. So that's what Lance was saying earlier in the show, that what about when people just stop swinging at the changeup because it's out of the zone? No, if the arm speed looks like a fastball visually, you're going to swing at the changeup. And that's what Verducci is positing might be the case with this guy's changeup. So that's heady. And then when they start sitting on that changeup, he will throw you the fastball at the bottom of the zone for a called strike because he can control it, knowing that you're not going to swing at something that looks like the changeup. So goodness, there's more pitches than that. There's more to think about. But if that is a window into the ceiling and sustainability of Jordan Wicks on the big league level, then this will eventually go down as a serious scouting find to get that guy as a late first-round pick in 2021. Later on, the Cubs and the Pirates, obviously. Our pregame starts at noon. The pregame on Marquee starts sooner than that, so I'll be getting out of here in just a little bit. The Brewers will be hosting the Padres, that at 1:10 Central. Hauser versus Waka there. Meanwhile, later on out in Arizona, it's the Reds and the D-backs. So who do you want to win that one if you're scoreboard watching? It's tricky. I guess the Reds, because you get more chances to beat the Reds directly. So you're rooting for Cincinnati. It's Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run. Marquise pregame is next. I continue talking lineup construction on The Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run.
No way. Too high. You said me too high.
Too high.
Not too high. Too hard. Right?
First was really high.
Who gives a f***? It's gone.
On 670 The Score.
I mean, I think in my dreams I imagine that, but, you know, I thought it was unbelievable. You know, just having the guys welcome me so much today made it a lot easier, you know, having them to lean on. You know, I thought Miggy did absolutely outstanding behind the plate. You know, he was a real calming force for me today. Yeah.
That's pretty cool to have Jordan Wicks talking about Miggy, Miguel Amaya, who he knows from minor league life and from Cubs camp over the last couple of years. Jordan Wicks is the story of the Cubs moment, having pitched last night and made his big league debut. And we've been talking a lot about it, and there's a lot of stuff out there in the data that is that's helpful. By the way, we can open the phone lines here for the last half hour of the show, so we'll throw them open, hit that button, and the assistant producer is available to help with call screening here in his final half hour of work on the season. The fact that he threw so many changeups, way more changeups than fastballs, and he got not only 9 swinging strikes on the changeup, but 7 looking strikes on the sinking fastball, the one that looks like a changeup but is not. So the two-seam sinking fastball got 7 called strikes on those, and 9 swinging strikes on the changeup. That is the stuff right there. That's what you're looking for. And that's the plan that was hatched. I don't know how much they talked about it before the game, but they sure as hell talked about it at the mound visit. That changed everything. A little more from Jordan Wicks last night, talking about making his MLB debut while in the middle of a pennant race.
Yeah, the focuses are on winning. You know, we don't have time to go up here and, you know, try to ease our way into it and get settled in and try and be cute. You know, it's about putting our team in the best position to win ball games. And, you know, I love that personally because that's the way I was raised, was, you know, play winning baseball is all about winning. And so, you know, I felt like, you know, the people that have coached me from a young age that have brought me up in that culture, you know, prepared me for today.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And he had a giant pile of family there. There was a dad, there was a wife, I think he's married, right? There was at least one sister, I do believe.
His mother and father-in-law, a big group of people all out there supporting him, which is really cool. I think he's got family from Pennsylvania, too. So
okay, family from Pennsylvania. He was born in Arkansas.
Yep.
But anyway, Jordan Wicks, story of the game. And that mound visit, a big, big deal. Here's David Ross talking about that mound visit in the first inning. From last
nerves night. Going. I mean, how much do you think that mound visit just did kind of allow him to take a step back?
Yeah, I didn't go out there. Yeah, it definitely. I mean, the game speaks for itself and how he settled in. I think, you know, see what Tommy said, and I didn't ask him, and maybe you can ask Jordan what that felt like. But sure, they came out. The same thing they did yesterday. They came out swinging on a veteran like Kyle. They're gonna be in there. You know, he didn't even get a chance to really get to his secondary stuff. It just felt like they were in hitter's counts and came out swinging. And luckily, he settled in. And actually, not even luckily. Like that's who he is. Like that's a really good outing.
So reluctant to give credit about it, though he took the credit during the broadcast. But he does give you what it actually was there at the end, which is they're swinging. So throw the stuff that looks like a strike but isn't. They're swinging. And then you can get them. So that was the flip, and that's how it happened. All right, I've been wanting to talk about this, been wanting to hear about this, because, look, Ian Happ has actually been real good over his last, I think it's the last 8 games. He's got an OPS of 835, does Ian Happ. And there's been a lot of big hits in there, too. There's been a homer. There's been a big double last night down the line that Dansby Swanson read perfectly as a base runner. My goodness. But Happ had a game-winning hit the other night. Like, a little bit of an offensive resurgence for Ian Happ over these last 8 games. In the 41 games before that, he was batting 189 with an OPS of 669.
That's no good.
And I think everybody knows that the numbers against left-handed pitching as a right-handed hitter were way worse than that. They were absolutely brutal. I've got those here, and darn it, I'm gonna find them. As I'm finding them, by the way, I said that Cubs fans should be rooting for Cincinnati because you've got games left with Cincinnati. So today in the afternoon, Cincinnati and Arizona, go ahead and root for those Reds. You can take care of them. Several people, including some of my favorite Wrigley Field employees, have either texted the show or texted me in person and said, I think they have more with the Diamondbacks left. They have 7 games left with the Diamondbacks and 4 games left with the Cincinnati Reds. So actually, you should be rooting for the Reds this afternoon.
How about that? Isn't that strange?
Dude, how about the fact that so many people are plugged into the scoreboard watching and the schedule that they're able to correct me on that?
I miss it, man. That's so awesome.
That's so awesome that we're at that kind of moment in the baseball season.
That's how you do it.
Yeah, right? That is, Coom. That's how you do it. So a lot of people helping me with that. As a right-handed hitter, as of a couple of days ago, Ian Happ, a 698 OPS as a right-handed hitter. That's on the entire season. So it's been really bad. 369 slugging. And both of those are just below his career numbers, so it's not really an anomaly. And as a right-handed hitter, Happ on the year would be 124th in slugging in MLB. And that's you've got hitting third against lefties? So it doesn't, 124th. So people scream and cry about it. We've talked a lot about lineup construction. Me and Sahadev Sharma had a conversation about it on Parker than Spiegel the other day, and he said that David Ross has his reasons. Well, here we go. David Ross on Marquee the other day gave us his reasons for lineup construction, specifically relating to Happ in the three-hole.
Well, I think the thing about Ian and what he brings to our team, he's played the most games on our team, right? And he's as consistent of an at bat as I think we have on our team. And I mean that in a fact of like when he's scuffling, when he's going well, when he's hitting for power, when he's getting on base, you don't see a change in the consistency in the at bat. Put Talkman in that level. I love the switch hitter in front of Belly. I love the on base in front of Belly. Belly's been our best hitter this year. And I like the veteran presence, so to speak, that Ian brings. I think there's a lot of things that you can look at from a lineup standpoint, but since we've been going well, Ian's been in the three hole. I think we've been one of the top run scoring teams in the second half in Major League Baseball, and I think we have a top five or six offense in all of baseball. Why would I mess with that? If it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of thing, right? You know? So I think that's kind of where if all those things, I'm taking all those things. I think you could make arguments for when Morel's hot, do you put him up there? But there's not as much on base in front of Belly. You can make the argument that Candy's a similar switch hit player, but he's really thrived in the role he's been put in. And what's it do to the team dynamic? What's it do to the confidence of a guy? I talk a lot about that, like consistency from a manager and belief in a player. Never really gets talked about enough, and I believe in those things outside of just performance. I think there's a lot that goes into believing in your guys through good and bad, and I think Ian has shown me over the time being his manager that he's going to go through some moments of just not being his best, but he's going to come out the other side because he's consistent in his attitude and his work.
Man, that is all you can ask for. In terms of an explanation, he has all the information. He's armed with everything. He's aware of stuff. But he's decided, for the reasons he put it right there, to leave it the way it is. You can still disagree. If you're looking at the numbers and you're watching stuff, you can still disagree. But he's the human dealing with the humans. He says, sure, you could have Candelario as a similar switch hit profile, and Candelario's numbers as a right-handed hitter are better. So even if you want, if you liked the switch hitter before Belly, if you would say, well, why not put Candelario there against lefties and move Happ down? Just do that, and then you don't have to mess up everything else that you like. you know, but he said Candelario has thrived in the position he's in. He doesn't want Candelario to get in his own head all of a sudden as a three hitter and maybe be a little bit different. He doesn't know Candelario personally like he knows Ian. He doesn't know that Candelario won't change or be affected. These are human beings. Look, the backdrop of all the bullpen conversation we've been having is frankly this. Keegan Thompson crumbled in high leverage situations. It was very obvious if you were watching The Human. Think about how much more they know on the inside. Caleb Killian is not trusted as another spot starter here again because he totally melted down that night as a spot start in April. You know, that stuff matters. So he loves the stability that Ian gives him. And he thinks of Tauchman in the same way. The one thing that I don't like is Cody Bellinger not getting an at-bat in the first inning. It makes me crazy. Maybe that means that Nico shouldn't be in the two-hole sometimes. Maybe Nico should be lower. But he's showing belief in Nico, and he loves Nico's bat control. And Nico steals a ton of bases. And so, like, here's the thing about Nico, Hap, Bellinger as a trio. He just told you he loves the switch hitter Hap before Bellinger because of how that affects pitching changes. And things like that. And he loves the on base of Happ before Bellinger because he walks a lot. Remember, Ian Happ and walks in baseball on the year is fifth with 82 behind Juan Soto, Kyle Schwarber, Shohei Ohtani, and Matt Olson. 82 walks. It's a lot. Fifth in the league. And he likes the switch hitter who takes pitches behind the base stealer, Nico Horner. So I get it. You could argue, then go Horner, Hap, Bellinger, 1-2-3. Did they do that at the beginning of the year?
They've done that a couple times.
Okay. But
I don't think recently. I think it was like Horner, I think it was Horner, Hap, Swanson, Bellinger.
So he keeps Belly in the cleanup. And I get it. And that does lengthen your lineup to have Belly in the cleanup. That's why I get that, you know? At certain points, now you got Belly, Seiya, 4-5. Look, it can all be argued. It can all be discussed. That's the beauty of baseball. But he gave you his reasons really clearly. And that, as a fan, is the most you can ask for.
Right. That's what you want. You want to understand the thought process at the very least, right?
Yep. Thought that was really interesting. Here's a text. David Ross's argument is the status quo fallacy that Keith Law debunks in The Inside Game. So you're saying he debunks it with more numbers, right? He uses more numbers to, you know, and Keith Law, it's a perfect reference. It that couldn't be better if Keith Law had texted it himself. And I would say that to Keith directly. Or to Boog about Keith directly. That the humans get to make the choices because the humans are actually reading the humans. And if you want the absence of choke, which I think is what you agree with, if you don't agree with clutch, you certainly agree with the absence of choke. If you want that to matter on a human level, then you're going to have to let the humans make the calls. 670, the score is where you are. It's hit and run. My favorite player in baseball returned to his old home last night. We'll talk about that as we wrap up before Cubs baseball at the top of the hour.
Hit and run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
A raucous ovation here for Mookie Betts.
That is the standing ovation at Fenway Park for Mookie Betts. It's my favorite player in baseball. Has been for a while. Yes, and I was born and raised a Red Sox fan, so that's certainly part of it. But that dude is just, it's amazing. Everything that he can do on the field is just staggering. And a lot of it is obviously offensively, but that's a guy who is a Gold Glove right fielder who I'm convinced could be a Gold Glove center fielder. and also plays a really good second base when needed, and also this year now plays a really good shortstop when needed. And oh, by the way, he can steal bases. And oh, by the way, he's a great teammate, super fun, stays healthy. And oh, by the way, once in Boston, he was seen after a playoff game delivering food to the homeless who were sleeping in front of the Boston Public Library. And it wasn't anything he was publicizing. It was just something that he did for a long time in Boston. He's just that dude. Also, he's bowled multiple 300 games. And he can run really good routes as a wide receiver. I saw that happen one time. And then there's this. His last 47 games. It's a big sample, folks. He's got an OPS of 1.265 in his last 47 games. He's slugging .769, is Mookie Betts. He's going to beat his career high in homers. He may already have beaten his career high in homers. He's like having a crazy power breakout season. He's unbelievable and worth every penny that he's getting. Let's listen to him double off the monster on Friday night at Fenway.
Mookie Betts sends one toward the gap in left center. That one hits the wall. On his way to second base, Mookie Betts back in Boston has a double.
Yeah, just like the start of the game for Verdugo, right? Ambush City. Ready to hit early off a cutter. Crawford, he's seen just about everything. A little slider, he tries to get outer third. Bullet off that monster.
You know, if Finn were around, he would have said, well, Mookie says hello.
Ah, that's nice. That's Wayne Randazzo with a nod to Mookie Betts. Mookie Betts, talking about Boston, says it's a super dope place to play.
I would definitely recommend it. It's a super dope place to play. You know, I've had the time of my life playing here. I think a lot of people do. But I would tell them, if you go up there, you know you got to play well. There's nothing else. You know, you got to go up there and you got to play well. And I think that's why I did play well, because I knew every day I put the uniform on, you got to play well.
And he did. And he's still playing well because that's the way the man goes about his business. There are now two batters in all of baseball with an OPS over one. You know, I love to look at the leaders every Sunday morning. Shohei Ohtani and Mookie Betts. Mookie has joined Shohei as the only qualified hitter to have an on-base plus slugging over one. He's got 34 homers now. That is one off his career high in home runs. Just a remarkable player. Reuben Ford Spiegel has been the assistant producer. Hello, young man. It's been great to have you all summer long. Grab a microphone. Have you enjoyed yourself? Have you enjoyed yourself this year? I'd like you to tell me something that you're grateful for being here and getting to work at 670 The Score this summer. Something you're grateful for about it. Something you're grateful for. He doesn't know how to use the headphones. It's okay. It's been fun. Well, I've been grateful to have you. It's okay, buddy. Love you. All is well. Thank you to Mitch Rosen for allowing the Roobster to be here. Cubs baseball is next. Sean Sears was great. Thank you to everybody who helped with the Marquee video stream. Lance Brzdowski was on the show. Incredible conversation with Ryan McGuffey at 9:40. White Sox fans, go back and listen to that. And Chris Kampka was terrific, as always, at 10:40. Cubs baseball is next, right here on 670 The Score. And I'll be back with Parkins and Spiegel tomorrow at 2.
Got to thinking, do you think this way? When you get on flights, you start looking at the people that come on, right? Mm-hmm. And you see a lot of kids, and you figure, okay, you know, a lot of kids on this flight, I feel pretty safe. You know, that it's going to have an easy flight.
I look into the cockpit and see who's in there.
I know, but I also look at the people. What happened when, if you're all of a sudden, you start seeing a lot of people, and you might be the youngest guy by like 20 years, and you're like, oh, this might be... Hopefully it's not the time. These people have lived a long life. You never know.
What?
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
It's time for Hit and Run on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score and on the Marquee Sports Network. Here's Matt Spiegel.
Good morning and welcome into Hit and Run. If you're just joining us, perhaps on the Marquee Sports Network, I've been rolling on 670 The Score for a couple hours. Been an eventful show and a fun show because we have relevant August baseball. Relevant late August baseball. This is the dream every year for me when I start this baseball show in this unique two-team town, is that somebody steps forward and is a buyer at the deadline. Somebody steps forward and is offering playoff possibilities in late August and September, and indeed the Chicago Cubs are. Right now, they're four games back of the Milwaukee Brewers, who are not allowed to lose games anymore. They've won seven in a row, have Milwaukee. The Cubs, though, also are second in the National League wildcard race, and there are three teams that make the wildcard. So the Phillies are number one, then the Cubs, they're half game up on the resurgent Arizona Diamondbacks, who are a half game up themselves for the final spot on the Cincinnati Reds, and the Miami Marlins lurk there. So every game matters. Every roster decision matters. Every at-bat matters. Every pitching decision matters. Every mound visit matters. And last night, we had the greatest mound visit in the history of mound visits. One of them, anyway, because the young prospect, Jordan Wicks, number 10 prospect in the Cubs system, makes his start last night, gives up a homer to Ke'Bryan Hayes to start the game. A rocket single up the middle from Brian Reynolds, I think it was, as the second hitter. Walks the third hitter, and then is behind 2-0 on Connor Joe, with two men on and nobody out. And Tommy Hotovy goes out to the mound. Later we find out that he and David Ross wanted to get across the message, hey, you're really good at your off-speed stuff. Go ahead and lean on that, okay? Stop trying to establish the fastball and think like a big league pitcher, yada, yada. Just throw your junk. It's really, really good. And 27 changeups over the next five innings that got nine swings and misses were the highlight of the arsenal from Jordan Wicks as he retired 15 in a row and picked up his first major league win in his first major league start. Amazing stuff. Let's talk about that and other things with our friend Lance Brzdowski from the Marquee Sports Network. You see him on there doing a lot of different stuff. He is the player development analyst. He's also a guy you'll see on pre and post doing a million things, mid-game. And you'll see him with me and Danny Parkins on Tuesday nights when we do our gambling cast, which is affectionately called Hey Better Better. Lance, welcome in as you join me right now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. What do you say, Lance? How are you?
I'm fantastic, Matt. Thanks for having me, man. I enjoy those gambling casts. They're a ton of fun to talk with you guys and kind of sit in on the usual conversation you and Danny always have. I feel like an outsider, but maybe kind of an insider. I don't know.
Yeah, no. You're definitely third wheeling on the chemistry, but you're mixing your way in there, dude. You're tussling, and you helped me survive Danny, because at that point in the day, I've had him enough in my life. You know what I mean?
I get it.
All right. So listen, I just talked about Jordan Wicks. That was really fascinating. And from a player development perspective, which you know so well, talk about the process over the last couple years, because that is a first-round pick from 2 years ago. And one of the reasons they took him is they thought that they could possibly fast-track him to the major leagues. And here we are.
Totally, yeah. So they added multiple pitches to his repertoire. You might have noticed yesterday he was throwing like six. It's a very deep mix. Not, you know, velo stuff. I have two pitches, throw them as much as I possibly can. Slider 50% of the time or something like that. This is a different kind of pitcher. It's a pitchability mix. It's multiple fastballs. It's the sweeper curve off that. He added a cutter. The sweeper and the cutter are the two pitches they added. The sinker as well was a pitch that he kind of toggled off at the beginning of last year, then brought in to his repertoire. He leaned on that a bit more this year, and especially yesterday, than he had even at Kansas State in the past. But the cutter and the slider are the two big pitches to kind of help him. Cutter into righties and slider more as a lefty pitch. But that start was fascinating from a lot of perspectives. I think the one that jumps out to me the most is when you look at what he was doing at AAA in terms of usage. He was using his fastball about 35% of the time, changeup 25%. And yesterday's outing, he basically flipped those usage, right? You were talking about that mound visit that Hovey had where they were like, hey, they're going to start, the Pirates are going to start swinging. You might as well throw your changeup kind of as much as possible. And you saw that. He threw 27 of them. The craziest thing to me, though, and this is something I definitely am watching going forward with him, he only threw three of those changeups inside the strike zone. So he is heavily outside of the zone with that pitch yesterday. The Pirates are a team in particular that is particularly strong versus left-handed pitching. They chase a lot. They're not versus good versus changeups. So going forward, I think it's very interesting. I'm always the guy that's looking forward. I definitely want to reflect and give, you know, Wicks a ton of credit for that outing. I've talked with him a ton. He's a super sharp guy. I loved when he went out for that pitching change. You saw his body language was super stoic and sharp. That's the impression I've gotten every single time I've communicated with him. He's a very, very mature pitcher, I think, mentally, in terms of his approach to the game, probably because of his many years at college and the innings he's thrown. But watching going forward for me is what happens if he's in a situation against a team where they're not swinging at the changeup outside of the zone. Is he able to come in the zone with it? Is it as effective? Does he go to other pitches? But regardless, the changeup was fantastic yesterday. For me, it's just a matter of how it looks going forward when maybe it's not totally on. Can he go to the other five pitches in his repertoire and can those get major league hitters out? I think they can. It's just a matter of, like, does he dominate like he did yesterday, or is it more kind of league average starter, number four, number five? Regardless, both of those are good options for the Cubs right now.
Yeah, I mean, both of those are real good options, especially to be able to plug in right now when you've got injuries in the middle of a pennant race. Interesting analysis there from you. Lots of good stuff in there. I love the stuff about the personal mentality, fact that you've met him and you see it and you saw it. You talk about the body language during the greatest mound visit in history. And that message of, like, go ahead and throw the, they're going to swing. Here's what I would counter with. I'd counter with two things. One, it's a strike to ball changeup, right? It starts looking like a strike and ends up a ball, kind of like Fulmer's slider when he's healthy. And we can talk about him as a strike to ball slider. So that's how you take advantage of aggressive hitters, right? Is if they're going to be swinging, go ahead and throw that one. He seems to have the arm speed that makes it look like a fastball upon delivery, and that can mess with batters' minds. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Totally. So I think you're spot on. Changeups are generally chase pitches. They're out of the zone actually more than the average slider in Major League Baseball. So that's definitely something to consider. My counter to your counter would be, what happens when a team's approach is just, I'm not swinging at anything down in the zone? Like, if you want to try to spot a changeup down away, or you want to spot fastballs or cutters down, I'm fine with that. I'm only swinging belt or up. And maybe that's obviously an idealistic approach. Like, I don't necessarily know whether a team top down in a lineup would be able to execute that. Maybe a team like the Braves can. I bet the Dodgers might be able to. Some of the sharper teams in baseball,
yeah,
with really deep lineups. But that's kind of what I'm watching going forward. I think he's going to get the Reds in his next outing. They're more average versus left-handed pitching. They're aggressive as a team offensively too. So I don't know if we're going to see a drastic difference, but I do think it's a step up in terms of offense that he's going to see. The Pirates offense is not good versus lefties. Reds is more average, so we'll see kind of how he does going forward there. But I agree with you, strike the ball pitch. Yeah, arm speed is something, you know, I talked to Ryan here on, and we have stuff on the data side that could kind of prove out why changeups are good. We generally look at things like the drop separation between a fastball and a changeup, the velocity separation between those two pitches. But if you talk to players and coaches, I think the thing they always bring up is just how's the sell of the pitch, the on speed of the pitch, how does it look out of hand? The tough thing with that on the public side is it's hard for us to kind of prove it out because we don't have a lot of public biomechanic information. So we're not able to say, yes, his arm speed, you know, the differential arm speed between his four seam and his changeup is better than league average. I think internally teams can probably do that, but we just probably will never get that biomechanic data publicly. So that's a beautiful blend of like the data can tell us one thing, but you also have to talk to players and coaches. And the thing that I've generally learned, I used to be very stubborn with a lot of data a couple years ago and stuff, thinking that that was the only thing to look at. But then as you grow in the game and you talk to people who are incredibly smart, generally when they bring up something over and over and you hear from multiple perspectives, I think that stuff is generally true, even if we don't have objective information to back it up. So I totally agree with the arm speed sell thing. Yeah. I think that matters for some guys in particular. But Wicks also has underlying data in the changeup that looks good too. So again, I think it's a mesh of all that. And as you said, it is strike the ball.
So yeah, a couple things there. First of all, what he's talking about, how the teams always have better stuff than the public has in terms of measurables. Yeah. This is why guys like Lance and others like dream of working for teams eventually, because then you could have access to all of that stuff, right? Then you could really know everything and really be as smart as you can be informed. All right, I'm going to play something a little bit later on in the show from last night's game about Wick. So we'll get to that a little bit later on. But while I have Lance Brozdowski, help me figure out what other pitching can come up from the minors in what sort of roles. Here's my impressions as of right now, that Keegan Thompson is here not really to be given another chance in specific high leverage necessarily. You saw Rossi even in late high leverage, I don't know how to say it, go to Palencia last night to try and finish the game instead of maybe Keegan, and then go to Adbert when he had to. Like, Keegan is here to be a long man. He's proven that he's good at that, proven that he can do the multiple inning relief stint. So that's one thing, one data point for me. The other is Michael Fulmer now to the injured list with a forearm strain, which is terrifying, and I don't know if he's coming back at all. So who are the other options for high leverage, maybe right-handers, or it could be a lefty, to come up from the minors and help this team right now in win-now mode of a pennant race?
Yeah, this is a tough one, specifically because of the qualifier of right now, because I think if Ben Brown was healthy, he'd be a really nice addition to this team. He's currently down with an oblique injury. I believe he's in Arizona rehabbing. You know, I was actually talking to Alex Cohn, the AAA broadcaster, this morning for an interview we did with him about LR in our pregame show. And he said that Ben Brown told him that he'll be back. Like, he will be back soon. He didn't think this was a big thing. So if that timetable speeds up and is good and there's nothing drastically wrong with the oblique and he gets back, I do think he's a guy that they can slot into more leverage situations, because I like the fastball and I like the curveball. The curveball is kind of a wacky pitch. It's pretty hard. It works really well either handedness. And he's already kind of 94, 96. I think if he's pure pen where it's just one inning or two, he could jump that up to maybe 96, 98 or something like that. And I think that would help everything grade out better. You know, velocity has a huge influence on the grade of a pitch. So I really like Ben Brown. I think in terms of confidence in a leverage situation, he could work. He also has kind of that mindset that I really like, kind of the Jordan Wicks stoic angle that I think would work in a situation later in the game. But the thing we've seen this year specifically, and this is probably a combination of Ross, and I also think the front office, is just not putting those young guys in crazy leverage situations right off the bat. Palencia almost kind of backed into it based on that extra inning game in Milwaukee where he came in late and they were like, we kind of got no one else, man. You got it. And, you know, he's pitched kind of up and down since for the most part. I do think that his stuff is really good, and I still think maybe there's more to piece together beyond the stuff. Throws really hard. The fastball does kind of get hit despite the velocity. The slider, I love. I want him throwing that as much as possible, I would say. I don't know if there's a specific answer of like, yes, we have this prospect that we can immediately slot into leverage, which then brings it back to, again, blending the analytics in what I think on field matters from a Ross perspective of like, how does this guy look in this situation from a mentality standpoint? You know, the data is probably going to say that we like Palencia in those spots because we think the slider is one of the best quality pitches in that bullpen. But if Palencia can't consistently get those, convert positively on those higher leverage opportunities, then I don't think personally that Ross would be confident putting him in those situations. You know, that's again the blend of like, you know, Caleb Killian, we saw this with, right? Like, he's a good example of like, we think the four seam is a better pitch than you think it is internally as an organization. Like, it just grades out better. And he's like, well, I'm just more comfortable with the sinker, so I'm going to throw it more. So you get that blend of like, okay, we think that if you toggled four-seam usage up, it would benefit you more. But, you know, would that come at the expense of command? And would the result of that not be positive? Like, that's always the ebb and flow of a lot of these situations. We've seen that a bit with Wesneski, too. The cutter is a really good pitch. I don't necessarily know if he has total confidence in that cutter, especially executing inside the lefties. So it's like, okay, if the guy can't execute what we believe the data says will make him a better pitcher, then do you force that guy into that bucket or do you push them to what they're more comfortable with? This is something I imagine Hadovy thinks about all the time. It's a consideration probably for every pitcher. Ideally, you run into a situation like Jordan Wicks where it's like, oh, your changeup is probably your best pitch. Oh, and actually you throw it a lot. Oh, and you're comfortable with it? Great. That's perfect. That's what we like to see.
Yeah.
So there we go. That's the trifecta of things. But I wish I had a better answer for you. Fulmer being down hurts. I think the key here is to try to get Brent Brown to the major league level as a reliever. Don't worry about kind of stretching him back out to 4 or 5 innings. See if the velo jumps up in short stints and use him as like a fastball curveball guy that won't have big issues versus eat headiness because of how that curveball works. So that's kind of what I'm waiting for, but that's very heavily dependent on timetable, as I just said. I don't know where the oblique is. He's in Arizona. Hopefully he's up back at AAA maybe in another week or two, and then you could probably fast track him into the pen at that point. But I don't see a clear answer here. You know, they have Shane Green in AAA. They've started in a couple situations. He's an old Braves Dodger reliever. You know, he's only 90-93-ish, kind of in that window, sinker-cutter guy. I don't really see him in leverage spots. There's some lefties down there, Riley Martin and Bailey Horn. Both of them, I think, are better, obviously, at getting lefties out than righties. Again, like, I just don't think there's an obvious, this guy can now go pitch the seventh. You know, I really think they got to heavily rely on Alzolay, Leiter and Merriweather and kind of figure out the rest from there.
Yeah, and they'll need a fourth one that they can trust. So maybe it'll be Keegan Thompson given another shot, or maybe I like the idea of Ben Brown. Talking to Lance Brozdowski from Marquee here on Hit and Run, which is also on Marquee right now this half hour. So the roster is at 26 in September. So by next week, you can go to 28. And that probably means one position player and one pitcher. Ideally, it's Ben Brown healthy to come in and be the extra possible high leverage reliever. Love that idea. And then is there any way it's not Pete Crow Armstrong, who has been fast tracked and is at AAA and has been killing pitching? And oh, by the way, used in a corner outfield spot this week. Well, that's interesting. He's never played corner outfield at any level other than right now, as he prepares for a potential September call-up. He's coming, isn't he, Lance?
I really think he is. I don't really have any inside info here as to whether he will be coming, but I do think it makes a lot of logical sense. I also think, to your point there about playing corner outfield spots, oftentimes I think the organization, or any organization, not even just the Cubs, will tell you inadvertently what they're thinking on a particular guy.
Yep.
You know, like, I to some extent, I think this happened with Mervish here, where they bring in multiple options in the offseason. You know, neither of those obviously panned out, but that was almost, to me, the organization saying, you know, we think Mervish maybe needs more polishing, despite hitting 37 home runs in the minor leagues the prior year. You know, so, like, that's the situation we're seeing with PCA now, where it's like, okay, the team may not say he is coming up, but by them playing him in the corner spots, you could kind of interpret, oh, okay, you know, why else would they be doing that? They're not just doing that in late August to, like, get PCA acclimated to the corner spots for next year. They're doing it because I think from a game planning standpoint and probably a late positioning standpoint, you know, they may not want him in center field all the time, or they may think the best lineup is to put a guy like Talkman at the top of the order with high OBP and have him play a serviceable center field. And then maybe they like a guy like him over Suzuki in right field or something along those lines, especially with a deep corner out there in right. I think PCA would play a great right field. Obviously, he plays an incredible center field. So to me, it makes a lot of sense. The thing that I think is the hidden part with PCA, and I'll qualify this by saying that I think we're seeing a widening of a gap between AAA pitching and major league pitching, such that guys who are coming up to the major league level, you know, maybe struggle a bit off the bat more than you normally would project in the past. And that's a product of just teams having a very good understanding of when stuff is good in a minor league arm, there's probably no point in leaving them in the minor leagues. We've seen teams like the Mariners promote guys from AA on a whim. We've seen this with a variety of other organizations as well. And as a byproduct of that, you run into situations where major league or minor league hitters will look really good and then come up and struggle right off the bat because it's like, whoa, I'm getting great stuff every day as opposed to the minor leagues where I'm getting a lot of quad A guy mixed with good arms. Given that, though, PCA has dominated, particularly from a slug perspective. He's over 500 in his last 14 games down at AAA. That's kind of almost the unexpected part of his profile. When he was with the Mets, he was an OBP guy. I always thought of him as like, okay, what if you get Kevin Kiermaier, who's a perennial Gold Glove defender, one of the best center fielders in baseball, and you add some OBP, you add some more OBP, a little more slug. Now we're seeing that he could be well more than that. He could be an impact power bat. I think that's one of the most underrated games. We're thinking of him as like a defensive replacement coming up,
yeah.
But I genuinely think this guy can have an average barrel rate at the major league level. And, you know, I was trying to figure out some like offensive comps. Maybe like a Brian Reynolds or a James Outman from the Dodgers and Pirates for Brian Reynolds, where it's a nice blend of barrel with OBP and high average. I just, those two guys in particular have more pop than I think you give them credit, not you specifically, but we as an industry give them credit for, especially Outman early in the year.
Yeah.
And Reynolds is another guy too, who could put up 25 tanks. And I think PCA is pushed into that window where it's not just he's coming up for the outfield defense. He's coming up because this guy has an above average barrel rate in AAA. And I think he's going to slug probably close to 450, 500, even if that comes with the low average. If he's able to walk at 10% clip and put up like a 450 slug, like that's an above average hitter. Like I think we're almost undervaluing the offensive side relative to the defense, because the defense is super obvious. But to me, what we're saying from a batted ball perspective is fantastic with PCA.
Wow. Well, that would be incredible gravy. But if he's defense and speed and a little bit of OBP here in a pennant race, that would be great. By the way, Michael Harris of the Braves, 199 career games in the minors. Pete Crow Armstrong, as of right now, 201. So there are comps out there. Lance, you're the best. Thank you so much, man. Have a great day, and we'll see you on the pregame today.
I appreciate it. Thanks a ton, Matt.
You got it. That's Lance Brozdowski from Marquee. Yeah, I love that comp of Michael Harris II, the excellent Braves center fielder and nine hitter. Often. Sometimes he's a right fielder as well. All right, I mentioned this. This from the broadcast last night, and it was the Fox broadcast. Tom Verducci, one of the great baseball writers of all time, who's become, I think, the best writer turned media person. He's calling games. He's a color analyst. But listen to him talk about Jordan Wicks's changeup and the comp he makes to a true legend of a left-handed pitcher is striking.
And Kevin, I think that changeup is so good. I don't think, you know, that with exposure, in other words, the more hitters see it, the more they'll be onto it. You know, it's a Johan Santana type changeup where you can sit on it, know it's coming, and it's just still hard to pick up. And it was, I think, even more impressive. The two strikeouts he got on called sinkers in the zone, when you could tell Pirates hitters at that point were sitting on his changeup. And got fastball for strike three. Just shows you his ability to command the strike zone with all of his pitches, but also his IQ.
See, you don't want to get your head out over your skis, but when you hear stuff like that, whew, kind of gets going a little bit. Because what Verducci's saying is that Johan Santana, the brilliant Minnesota Twin for years and years, and then effective as a Met, then what, they have 140-some pitch no-hitter that kind of led to some arm issues that never went away. But Santana, you couldn't not swing at his changeup. So that's what Lance was saying earlier in the show, that what about when people just stop swinging at the changeup because it's out of the zone? No, if the arm speed looks like a fastball visually, you're going to swing at the changeup. And that's what Verducci is positing might be the case with this guy's changeup. So that's heady. And then when they start sitting on that changeup, he will throw you the fastball at the bottom of the zone for a called strike because he can control it, knowing that you're not going to swing at something that looks like the changeup. So goodness, there's more pitches than that. There's more to think about. But if that is a window into the ceiling and sustainability of Jordan Wicks on the big league level, then this will eventually go down as a serious scouting find to get that guy as a late first round pick in 2021. Later on, the Cubs and the Pirates, obviously. Our pregame starts at noon. The pregame on Marquee starts sooner than that, so I'll be getting out of here in just a little bit. The Brewers will be hosting the Padres, that at 1:10 Central. Hauser versus Waka there. Meanwhile, later on out in Arizona, it's the Reds and the D-backs. So who do you want to win that one if you're scoreboard watching? It's tricky. I guess the Reds, because you get more chances to beat the Reds directly. So you're rooting for Cincinnati. It's Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run. Marquee's pregame is next. I continue talking lineup construction on The Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run.
No way. Too high. You said me too high.
Too high.
Not too high. Too hard. Right?
First it was really high.
Who gives a f***? It's gone.
On 670 The Score.
I mean, I think in my dreams I imagine that, but, you know, I thought it was unbelievable. You know, just having the guys welcome me so much today made it a lot easier, you know, having them to lean on. You know, I thought Miggy did absolutely outstanding behind the plate. You know, he was a real calming force for me today. Yeah.
That's pretty cool to have Jordan Wicks talking about Miggy, Miguel Amaya, who he knows from minor league life and from Cubs camp over the last couple of years. Jordan Wicks is the story of the Cubs moment, having pitched last night and made his big league debut. And we've been talking a lot about it, and there's a lot of stuff out there in the data that is that's helpful. By the way, we can open the phone lines here for the last half hour of the show, so we'll throw them open, hit that button, and the assistant producer is available to help with call screening here in his final half hour of work on the season. The fact that he threw so many change-ups, way more change-ups than fastballs, and he got not only 9 swinging strikes on the change-up, but 7 looking strikes on the sinking fastball, the one that looks like a change-up but is not. So the two-seam sinking fastball got 7 called strikes on those, and 9 swinging strikes on the changeup. That is the stuff right there. That's what you're looking for. And that's the plan that was hatched. I don't know how much they talked about it before the game, but they sure as hell talked about it at the mound visit. That changed everything. A little more from Jordan Wicks last night, talking about making his MLB debut while in the middle of a pennant race.
Yeah, the focuses are on winning. You know, we don't have time to go up here and, you know, try to ease our way into it and get settled in and try and be cute. You know, it's about putting our team in the best position to win ball games. And, you know, I love that personally because that's the way I was raised, was, you know, play winning baseball. It was all about winning. And so, you know, I felt like, you know, the people that have coached me from a young age that have brought me up in that culture, you know, prepared me for today.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And he had a giant pile of family there. There was a dad, there was a wife, I think he's married, right? There was at least one sister, I do believe.
His mother and father-in-law, a big group of people all out there support him, which is really cool. I think he's got family from Pennsylvania, too. So
okay, family from Pennsylvania. He was born in Arkansas.
Yep.
But anyway, Jordan Wicks, story of the game. And that mound visit, a big, big deal. Here's David Ross talking about that mound visit in the first inning. From last
nerves night. Going. I mean, how much do you think that mound visit just did kind of allow him to take a step back?
Yeah, I didn't go out there. Yeah, it definitely. I mean, the game speaks for itself and how he settled in. I think, you know, see what Tommy said, and I didn't ask him, and maybe you can ask Jordan what that felt like. But sure, they came out. The same thing they did yesterday. They came out swinging on a veteran like Kyle. They're gonna be in there. You know, he didn't even get a chance to really get to his secondary stuff. It just felt like they were in hitter's counts and came out swinging. And luckily, he settled in. And actually, not even luckily. Like that's who he is. Like that's a really good outing.
So reluctant to give credit about it, though he took the credit during the broadcast. But he does give you what it actually was there at the end, which is they're swinging. So throw the stuff that looks like a strike but isn't. They're swinging. And then you can get them. So that was the flip, and that's how it happened. All right, I've been wanting to talk about this, been wanting to hear about this, because, look, Ian Happ has actually been real good over his last, I think it's the last 8 games. He's got an OPS of 835. does Ian Happ? And there's been a lot of big hits in there, too. There's been a homer. There's been a big double last night down the line that Dansby Swanson read perfectly as a base runner. My goodness. But Happ had a game-winning hit the other night. Like, a little bit of an offensive resurgence for Ian Happ over these last eight games. In the 41 games before that, he was batting 189 with an OPS of 669.
That's no good.
And I think everybody knows that the numbers against left-handed pitching as a right-handed hitter were way worse than that. They were absolutely brutal. I've got those here, and darn it, I'm gonna find them. As I'm finding them, by the way, I said that Cubs fans should be rooting for Cincinnati because you've got games left with Cincinnati. So today in the afternoon, Cincinnati and Arizona, go ahead and root for those Reds. You can take care of them. Several people, including some of my favorite Wrigley Field employees, have either texted the show or texted me in person and said, I think they have more with the Diamondbacks left. They have 7 games left with the Diamondbacks and 4 games left with the Cincinnati Reds. So actually, you should be rooting for the Reds this afternoon.
How about that? Isn't that strange?
Dude, how about the fact that so many people are plugged into the scoreboard watching and the schedule that they're able to correct me on that?
I miss it, man. That's so awesome.
That's so awesome that we're at that kind of moment in the baseball season.
That's how you do it.
Right? That is, Coom. That's how you do it. So a lot of people helping me with that. As a right-handed hitter, as of a couple of days ago, Ian Happ, a 698 OPS as a right-handed hitter. That's on the entire season. So it's been really bad. 369 slugging. And both of those are just below his career numbers, so it's not really an anomaly. And as a right-handed hitter, Happ on the year would be 124th in slugging in MLB. And that's you've got hitting third against lefties? So it doesn't, 124th. So people scream and cry about it. We've talked a lot about lineup construction. Me and Sahadev Sharma had a conversation about it on Parker than Spiegel the other day, and he said that David Ross has his reasons. Well, here we go. David Ross on Marquee the other day gave us his reasons for lineup construction, specifically relating to Happ in the three-hole.
Well, I think the thing about Ian and what he brings to our team, he's played the most games on our team, right? And he's as consistent of and at bat as I think we have on our team. And I mean that in a fact of like when he's scuffling, when he's going well, when he's hitting for power, when he's getting on base, you don't see a change in the consistency in the at bat. Put Talkman in that level. I love the switch hitter in front of Belly. I love the on base in front of Belly. Belly's been our best hitter this year. And I like the veteran presence, so to speak, that Ian brings. I think there's a lot of things that you can look at from a lineup standpoint, but since we've been going well, Ian's been in the three hole. I think we've been one of the top run scoring teams in the second half in Major League Baseball, and I think we have a top five or six offense in all of baseball. Why would I mess with that? If it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of thing, right? You know? So I think that's kind of where all those things. I think you could make arguments for when Morel's hot, do you put him up there? But there's not as much on base in front of Belly. You can make the argument that Candy's a similar switch hit player, but he's really thrived in the role he's been put in. And what's it do to the team dynamic? What's it do to the confidence of a guy? I talk a lot about that, like consistency from a manager and belief in a player. Never really gets talked about enough, and I believe in those things outside of just performance. I think there's a lot that goes into believing in your guys through good and bad, and I think Ian has shown me over the time being his manager that he's going to go through some moments of just not being his best, but he's going to come out the other side because he's consistent in his attitude and his work.
Man, that is all you can ask for. In terms of an explanation, he has all the information. He's armed with everything. He's aware of stuff. But he's decided, for the reasons he put it right there, to leave it the way it is. You can still disagree. If you're looking at the numbers and you're watching stuff, you can still disagree. But he's the human dealing with the humans. He says, sure, you could have Candelario as a similar switch hit profile. And Candelario's numbers as a right-handed hitter are better. So even if you want, if you liked the switch hitter before Belly, if you would say, well, why not put Candelario there against lefties and move Hap down? Just do that. And then you don't have to mess up everything else that you like. You know, but he said Candelario has thrived in the position he's in. He doesn't want Candelario to get in his own head all of a sudden as a three hitter and maybe be a little bit different. He doesn't know Candelario personally like he knows Ian. He doesn't know that Candelario won't change or be affected. These are human beings. Look, the backdrop of all the bullpen conversation we've been having is frankly this. Keegan Thompson crumbled in high leverage situations. It was very obvious if you were watching the human. Think about how much more they know on the inside. Caleb Killian is not trusted as another spot starter here again because he totally melted down that night as a spot start in April. You know, that stuff matters. So he loves the stability that Ian gives him. And he thinks of Tauchman in the same way. The one thing that I don't like is Cody Bellinger not getting an at-bat in the first inning. It makes me crazy. Maybe that means that Nico shouldn't be in the two-hole sometimes. Maybe Nico should be lower. But he's showing belief in Nico, and he loves Nico's bat control. And Nico steals a ton of bases. And so, like, here's the thing about Nico, Hap, Bellinger as a trio. He just told you he loves the switch hitter Hap before Bellinger because of how that affects pitching changes. And things like that. And he loves the on base of Hap before Bellinger because he walks a lot. Remember, Ian Happ and walks in baseball on the year is fifth with 82 behind Juan Soto, Kyle Schwarber, Shohei Ohtani, and Matt Olson. 82 walks. It's a lot. Fifth in the league. And he likes the switch hitter who takes pitches behind the base stealer, Nico Horner. So I get it. You could argue, then go Horner, Hap, Bellinger, 1-2-3. Did they do that at the beginning of the year?
They've done that a couple times.
Okay. But
I don't think recently. I think it was like Horner, I think it was Horner, Hap, Swanson, Bellinger.
So he keeps Belly in the cleanup. And I get it. And that does lengthen your lineup to have Belly in the cleanup. That's why I get that, you know? At certain points, now you got Belly, Seiya, 4-5. Look, it can all be argued. It can all be discussed. That's the beauty of baseball. But he gave you his reasons really clearly. And that, as a fan, is the most you can ask for.
Right. That's what you want. You want to understand the thought process at the very least, right?
Yep. Thought that was really interesting. Here's a text. David Ross's argument is the status quo fallacy that Keith Law debunks in The Inside Game. So you're saying he debunks it with more numbers, right? He uses more numbers to, you know, and Keith Law, it's a perfect reference. It that couldn't be better if Keith Law had texted it himself. And I would say that to Keith directly. Or to Boog about Keith directly. That the humans get to make the choices because the humans are actually reading the humans. And if you want the absence of choke, which I think is what you agree with, if you don't agree with clutch, you certainly agree with the absence of choke. If you want that to matter on a human level, then you're going to have to let the humans make the calls. 670, the score is where you are. It's hit and run. My favorite player in baseball returned to his old home last night. We'll talk about that as we wrap up before Cubs baseball at the top of the hour.
Hit and run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
A raucous ovation here for Mookie Betts.
That is the standing ovation at Fenway Park for Mookie Betts. It's my favorite player in baseball. Has been for a while. Yes, and I was born and raised a Red Sox fan, so that's certainly part of it. But that dude is just, it's amazing. Everything that he can do on the field is just staggering. And a lot of it is obviously offensively, but that's a guy who is a Gold Glove right fielder who I'm convinced could be a Gold Glove center fielder, and also plays a really good second base when needed, and also this year now plays a really good shortstop when needed. And oh, by the way, he can steal bases. And oh, by the way, he's a great teammate, super fun, stays healthy. And oh, by the way, once in Boston, he was seen after a playoff game delivering food to the homeless who were sleeping in front of the Boston Public Library. And it wasn't anything he was publicizing. It was just something that he did for a long time in Boston. He's just that dude. Also, he's bowled multiple 300 games. And he can run really good routes as a wide receiver. I saw that happen one time. And then there's this. His last 47 games. This is a big sample, folks. He's got an OPS of 1.265. In his last 47 games, he's slugging .769, is Mookie Betts. He's going to beat his career high in homers. He may already have beaten his career high in homers. He's like having a crazy power breakout season. He's unbelievable and worth every penny that he's getting. Let's listen to him double off the monster on Friday night at Fenway.
Mookie Betts sends one toward the gap in left center. That will bounce the wall. His way to second base. Mookie Betts back in Boston has a double.
Yeah, just like the start of the game for Verdugo, right? Ambush City ready to hit early off a cutter. Crawford, he's seen just about everything. A little slider, he tries to get out her third bullet off that monster.
You know, if Finn were around, he would have said, well, Mookie says hello.
That's nice. That's Wayne Randazzo with a nod to Mookie Betts. Mookie Betts, talking about Boston, says it's a super dope place to play.
I would definitely recommend it. It's a super dope place to play. You know, I've had the time of my life playing here. I think a lot of people do. But I would tell them, if you go up there, you know you got to play well. There's nothing else. You know, you got to go up there and you got to play well. And I think that's why I did play well, because I knew every day I put the uniform on, you got to play well.
And he did, and he's still playing well because that's the way the man goes about his business. There are now two batters in all of baseball with an OPS over one. You know I love to look at the leaders every Sunday morning. Shohei Ohtani and Mookie Betts. Mookie has joined Shohei as the only qualified hitter to have an on-base plus slugging over one. He's got 34 homers now. That is one off his career high in home runs. Just a remarkable player. Reuben Ford Spiegel has been the assistant producer. Hello, young man. It's been great to have you all summer long. Grab a microphone. Have you enjoyed yourself? Have you enjoyed yourself this year? I'd like you to tell me something that you're grateful for being here and getting to work at 670 The Score this summer. Something you're grateful for about it. Something you're grateful for. He doesn't know how to use the headphones. It's okay. It's been fun. Well, I've been grateful to have you. It's okay, buddy. Love you. All is well. Thank you to Mitch Rosen for allowing the Roobster to be here. Cubs baseball is next. Sean Sears was great. Thank you to everybody who helped with the Marquee video stream. Lance Brzdowski was on the show. Incredible conversation with Ryan McGuffey at 9:40. White Sox fans, go back and listen to that. And Chris Kampka was terrific, as always, at 10:40. Cubs baseball is next, right here on 670 The Score, and I'll be back with Parkins and Spiegel tomorrow at 2.
I got to thinking, do you think this way? When you get on flights, you start looking at the people that come on, right? Mm-hmm. And you see a lot of kids, and you figure, okay, you know, a lot of kids on this flight, I feel pretty safe. You know, it's going to have an easy flight.
I look into the cockpit and see who's in there. Well,
I know, but I also look at the people. What happened when, if you're all of a sudden, you start seeing a lot of people and you might be the youngest guy by like 20 years and you're like, oh, this might be, hopefully it's not the time. These people have lived a long life. You never know.
What?
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them. Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.